Professors FM.
My name is Mike Lewis. I'm a professor at Emory University and the director of the Emory Marketing Analytics Center. Want to wish you guys a great welcome to our spring webinar series. The Analytics Center's mission is really focused these days on the topic of intense consumer loyalty. And so what that really equates for us is a focus on fandom. And so what we do at the center is we emphasize the development of knowledge related to fandom. And as part of that, we like to bring you guys as much content as we can, people working in the space. And so we've got a great situation today with Mr. Vince Thompson from Melt. Okay, so before we, as we get things a little bit ready, I'll tell you guys a little bit more about where we're going with the spring webinar series. So today we've got Vince Thompson. On March 11th, we will have Jay Busby from Yahoo Sports. We chose March 11th as the anniversary of the date when sports essentially was shut down by COVID. So Jay's going to come in and talk about sports in the last year and also about the art of storytelling. Then on March 25th, we have Ann and Sid Mashburn, sort of local Atlanta legends in the fashion and retailing space. In particular, Ann and Sid have done a masterful job in terms of creating a brand and a customer experience. And so, again, a business that has really generated a lot of consumer passion and, in fact, fans, how they're dealing with the COVID-19 environment. Okay, so the format for today is, we're going to kick things off pretty quickly here and move along to the main event, Vince. And throughout the talk, I want to encourage everyone out there, all the attendees, to submit questions via the Q&A function at the bottom of the screen. The gentleman with the Fanalytics background behind him is Doug Battle. He is the communications and sports analytics specialist for the Marketing Analytics Center. Doug will essentially collect the questions and deliver those to Vince in whatever time we've got left after Vince gets through his main message. Okay, so like I said, this is a great get for the center. Given our focus on consumer passion and fans, there's few folks in the Atlanta area that I think are sort of better able to speak to the topic from the marketing side of the equation. So Vince founded Melt in 2000 and built it into truly a remarkable agency. I'm going to check my notes here for just a second. 20 years of representation for Coca-Cola Company, 17 consecutive Final Fours, 7 consecutive seasons of ESPN College Game Day, FIFA, MLB, Coach Nick Saban. So someone that is very much at the center of sports marketing in especially the Southeast region. Vince is a local legend, named by the Atlanta Business Chronicle as one of Georgia's 30 most influential people in sports business for 2020, Chief Marketer Magazine's 2020 Top 200 Agencies. I don't want to sort of do this too briefly, but it's a long and epic list of accomplishments. How are you today, Vince?
Hey, thank you so much.
So what I think we want to do today, because Vince has come in with a deck that's going to provide essentially a nice overview of what the agency does, some of the highlights of his career, and getting to even where he's going to go next. So with this as a starting point, do you guys want to share the screen? And at this point, let's just kick things off for Mr. Vince Thompson.
Well, thank you so much for that amazing introduction. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Greetings and welcome to everybody. It's always an honor and a privilege to be able to talk to folks, try to help people, and particularly during this period of time, always honored to be a part of any program at Emory. Javier Coizueta is one of my best friends and and advisors and mentors. And so I know this institution is very special to him as well. And as you were mentioning, March 11th was a day that, you know, you always remember where you were. I'll never forget. I literally had taken my son to the Bahamas to celebrate his 20th birthday, which was March the 10th. We landed on March the 11th. And as soon as I landed, my phone literally started just blowing up with cancellations of the SEC basketball tournament, March Madness in limbo, Hangout Music Festival, PGA, Major League Baseball, MLS. Spring is when we make a lot of hay, and spring and summer, you know, in the event business, we produce about 1,000 events a year. But I'm going to talk to you a little bit today about silver linings and where I see things going into the future. So the breakdown of the presentation will be in three parts. We'll tell you a little bit about what we do. We've been very blessed. You know, as you said, we now represented Coke 21 years for all things sports marketing. We'll talk about that secret to the success as well. We'll talk a little bit about where I see these things going moving forward. And what I'm hearing in the marketplace. The great news is I'm starting to see some green shoots from corporate America. I'm hearing some positive things from green shoots, that hopefully things are going to come back. We'll talk about some new opportunities that are going to be out there for everybody. And then I do encourage you to submit questions and answers. I really love to help people, and we'll talk about my intern program a little bit, where we're trying to help as many students as we can. If you want to follow me on social media, at Vinny Inc., hit me up or hit me up on LinkedIn. We've got about 21,000 followers, which is a great Rolodex and resource for you. If you're reaching out to people that I'm connected to, you can tell them that you heard me on this presentation, you know, today. So big advocate of that. We'll talk about that in a little bit as well. My journey actually began in Lower Alabama, the real LA, a town of 800 people called Chatham with one traffic light. We could get to Gulf Shores and Orange Beach in less than 2 hours. I grew up fishing, and you know, I lived an idyllic lifestyle, like Mayberry, Andy Griffin, if you guys have heard of that. And I was kind of like the Opie Taylor. My dad was the mayor and owned a grocery store, but that is the actual red light of where I grew up. And I loved sports, and I loved to write about it. And so I had these dual passions. And in the old days in Alabama, when you're growing up, your school selection process was, are you going to go to Auburn or Alabama? And my parents were like, well, you're going to go to Auburn. And I'm like, well, okay. Unlike my son's a sophomore at University of Georgia, and he went through this, you know, arduous process as you guys have done at the undergrad and graduate level. You can make fun of me if you want. My ACT score was 21. I don't think I could get in. Probably couldn't even get in high school now. So when I got to Auburn, it was a little bit of a culture shock for me. In that, it was the largest place that I had ever been. Kyle, is that Skip? After that one? In the transition? I'm sorry. All right. I'm sorry about that. So I get to Auburn, and it was the biggest place that I'd ever been outside of going to a New Orleans Saints game, or in the summer going to an Atlanta Braves game. So suffice to say, I was in a little bit of a culture shock. I had never been around that many people. Immediately knew that it was immediately recognized that there was sort of a caste system when I went. Loosely, I'll say the haves and the have-nots. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but I recognized pretty quick, I'm like, I'm going to have to outwork and outthink and out-hustle these people if I want to get ahead in the world and I want to lay a vision for the things that I want to do. But I really just wanted to be a sports writer. It was the golden heyday of Bo Jackson and Charles Barkley. And a chance encounter in my first journalism class, the sports information director talked about the press box and the sidelines in the locker room. And after class, I was like, man, that's where I want to be. And that put me on a quixotic 4-year journey, helped Bo Jackson win the Heisman, had been published about 200 different times, had become very close friends with people like Paul Feinbaum and Dick Vitale and Brent Musburger. And so we'll talk about this a little bit later, but where you are today, COVID notwithstanding, the campus and these great professors and who are giving you this labor of love and creating all these amazing programs is the ultimate professional laboratory. So spent 15 years in Birmingham as sort of an apprentice, worked 7 years for a great sports marketing agency, was head of global marketing for HealthSouth, which is a massive sports medicine company. And at 37 years old, I had outgrown Birmingham. I had a tug in my stomach to be an entrepreneur. I had a newborn, and I said, well, I'm going to go dive in the deep end. So I moved to Atlanta and started Melt out of my home, which was founded around 4 driving pillars with the advent of the internet and not even social media, which stood for marketing, entertainment, lifestyle, and trends, because I thought I could do it better than anybody else. So we've been very fortunate. Like I said, prior to COVID, we produced 1,000 events a year at the highest levels. We were involved in activations for, dang near everything that you see on television or you may attend as a fan. This is just a small snapshot of the things that we work on. But, all the big rodeos, the food festivals, the wine festivals, the barbecue festivals, the music festivals, sampling of huge products and working on college campuses across the country. And we've been fortunate to have a 21-year relationship in the agency world with the Coca-Cola Company, which allows us to have an insight and work with major, major, major organizations and sponsors, unlike an agency, our size. People say, what's the secret to maintaining this relationship? And it's called, you never take it for granted. And that's true with any relationship in life. Never take the relationship for granted. Every day, it's like a plant or a flower. Cultivate it, nurture it, water it, groom it, trim it, fertilize it, give it light. And so we'll talk about those lessons learned a little bit later in the video cast. And we've been able to work with some of the biggest names in sports and entertainment. Coach Saban, LeBron James, James Harden, Coach Vitale, Cam Newton, Aaron Sanchez, Game Day, but the Jonas Brothers. But the main thing is that all of these people are just humans as well. So I try to find a commoner's touch when I'm dealing with them and make it relatable and build that relationship as well. They have been all blessed with different breaks in life or different talents and things that they do really, really well. But at the end of the day, they all want to be treated with a modicum of human kindness. So what's our sauce? It's going to be like anything that you do to be successful. You got to be nimble. You got to be adaptable. You got to be ahead of the curve, and you got to create your own movement. And this COVID and this pandemic, if you don't lose anybody that you love in this process, could be an amazing renaissance for all of your careers, all of your entrepreneurship, particularly you who are the most sophisticated consumer digital native in the world. And I'm bringing ideas to clients that a year ago, they would have thrown me out of the room. And now they're like, hey, maybe that's not so crazy after all. So just like today, me teaching this class on a Zoom environment, there are no crazy ideas anymore because everybody's perception and how we do business all over the world has changed. I haven't been on an airplane since March the 11th. I don't miss it. Rarely do I wear a sports jacket, which is going to be a giant challenge for Sid and Ann Mashburn. So the world has shifted, and everybody goes, well, when is this going back to normal? I got news for you. There ain't no normal anymore, nor will it be in the foreseeable future. So it's impacted every aspect of our daily life, and I knew on a dime that we had to carve our path and drive effective, positive change. Because let me note, my industry got 100% devastated. They're rarely fans at live events now, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. So one thing I wanted to do, I've always had a hugely successful intern program We had 40 kids from 500 resumes because I lecture in college campuses across the country. I love to help kids. I've been very blessed and had guardian angels, but I always wanted to share it outside the walls of the agency. The other thing is I needed to keep a positive forward face with the industry and with my clients because our industry had been devastated. It would have been easy to get under the bed. And I might have binge drank a day or two, but then after I started feeling sorry for myself, I said, to hell with it. We got to get back up and get on the saddle. And I wanted to show the world that we were more than just an event marketing agency. So we took our program virtual. I'm now proud to tell you that we have a year-round program, over 3,000 students, even more than 37 universities of these kids. I just taped my 85th podcast on career development with top leaders in the world, such as Jim Dinkins and Javier Goizueta. You can listen to that. You can get the advice, and then you can use that as an emotional networking tool to get to these people at a major level on LinkedIn, whereas you may not have had a warm intro or a warm lead. So we'll do another 100 of these. By the end of the year, we'll have over 150 to 180 in the can. We do a weekly career newsletter. I do a weekly sports business called The Meltdown on YouTube. I've got my new book out, which is trying to help you guys land a job in a post-COVID era, because I'm going to tell you, in our space, it's going to be brutal because the unemployment is so high. You're going to have people who are willing to take a less job for a less salary, and it's going to depress the entry-level job market. So I'm going to give you some tips today on how you circumvent that. And again, overnight, this shifted. March 16th, March 11th, millions of dollars of revenue, thousands of live events, major, major emotional, financial, physical toll, the event business, the travel business, the restaurant business. Some industries have thrived. The car business has thrived. The home business has thrived. But service organizations as a whole have taken a massive hit. However, when this comes back, it's going to create a major, major opportunity for all of us. Two phrases. Change is inevitable. Growth is optional. Choose wisely. And in chaos, there is opportunity. Look at the financial hits the top four sports organizations have taken. And by the way, because you got to understand that live sports is still the greatest bet to make long term. But two of the primary revenue drivers of professional sports are the fannies in the seats, the ticket revenue, the merch revenue, and the concession revenue, and the sponsor revenue that the teams like the Hawks sell into State Farm when people are there becoming aware of their brand and sampling their brand. So you're going to see a massive movement in investing in the investing world. You see these SPACs coming out, you see private equity coming in because they're getting that short-term cash to keep them propped up to get the other side of it. But we're going to talk today about, will fans come back? And if and when they do, what are their expectations for those experiences? So you see, we're beginning to see some green shoots. Super Bowl had 22,500 fans, 7,500 were first line responders. The 30,000 cutouts. You could give $100, have your cutout in the stand. The colleges have been impacted even a little bit harder and a little bit differently. They did have fans back, but their revenue losses from the television dollars kept them propped up. But sponsorship dollars, attendance dollars, donor dollars. A lot of people were unemployed. It kind of cut those off. We'll see what happens there. We're going to talk about some innovations that are going on into the college sports, because what the colleges now are understanding is that they're in the real estate business as well. So you don't want Sanford Stadium sitting there 359 days a year empty. So what else can you do with this multi-million dollar structure to draw people and revenue? And then you see the Hawks are still only operating at 10% capacity, 1,688 fans, and then all of these kind of, different things that you have to do. Do you take the test? Do you have your temperature, hand sanitary, prepackaged food, cashless, ticketless transaction, efficiency, and liability? And let me tell you another thing about the event business. I carry $10 million worth of insurance liability. The companies make me do that. But in my insurance, there was no interruption of business or force majeure that covered a pandemic or a virus. So I've been paying all these, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of dollars in insurance premiums, and I didn't get a penny back from business interruption. So where do we go from here? In May, 57% of you said that you would not go to a game. I tend to think now, and I think, like I said, I'm hearing probably Labor Day is going to be we're hoping the switch goes back in. I think the attitudes are different now. Vaccines, herd immunity, case counts, death counts, hospitalizations are going down. I believe that we'll see some pretty positive trends in the fall during kickoff, college, pro, NBA, MLS, MLB. You're going to have a smattering of fans at Augusta in April. TV ratings were down across the board, but primarily because of the proliferation of the politics, binge watching, and those types of things. But there are some positive trends that are going to continue to drive eyeballs, whether they're in television or in your mobile device and in the cord-cutting environment. So what's your journey? You may or may not have work or a job. So are you going to spend $1,000 to go to a Falcons game or a Hawks game? You may have been struggling with that even prior to the pandemic. Now you're like, well, I can take that same money, buy me an 80-inch television for $1,000, enjoy it in perpetuity, see a ton of games and all my favorite shows. I can sit home and be safe, not have some knucklehead give me COVID or stand up in front of me. And so you're going to have fans really beginning to question the value of that live and in-game entertainment experience. And so look for the teams to try to add as much more value to your experience to lure you back in there, whether it's high-speed internet access, surprise and delight, meet and greets. Arthur Blank does, you know, the $5 beer and food and all those types of things. And as I said, are we going to want to take the risk and want to take the hassle to go to a game where you can sit on the couch and, you know, see it in, you know, 4, 5, 6, 8D. If you saw the Super Bowl on Sunday, you could see these very clear images coming in on Mahomes and Brady. Those are those 4D cameras that really basically put you inside the huddle. So it's going to be fascinating to kind of see if that revenue, ever comes back, because there were attendance weaknesses in pro and college sports, particularly in college, prior to COVID. What's next? We do love our tailgating. So what is that going to look like? We know that a lot of the tailgating is attached to an emotional or a social occasion. So I anticipate some of that coming back, or at least in the home gating environment. We do know that the new cash coming into these sports franchises, so they're going to invest that money to try to get you guys there in a safe environment and give you more value, and the vaccine getting out there. Obviously, now you see where these NFL and NBA stadiums are testing sites and voting sites as well. But you probably will not ever see a hard ticket again. You probably will not see much cash in these venues, and you're going to see the food service evolve into a completely different transaction and environment now. And they're still testing a lot of that. And I think a lot of the vendors like Chick-fil-A may or may not, they may pass on these opportunities going forward because it's not an equal representation of their food the same way you would get it in their restaurant or through the drive-thru. But as I said, in chaos, there's opportunity. Legal wagering is sweeping the U.S. Fantasy, sweeping the U.S. Topgolf in Sanford Stadium, who'd have thought it? TikTok being a primary driver of a younger consumer into a sporting environment. We saw, Miley Cyrus, Lady Gaga, NFL using TikTok to drive, and even Nickelodeon to drive a newer consumer. It's not necessarily people my age. It's people your age that everybody's trying to figure out. So that means that you control the purse, the pocketbook, and the narrative. So how is that going to change sponsorships? The television rights deals, you'll see the NFL hit $100 billion because live sports is still the only true place to galvanize a whole bunch of eyeballs that are TiVo-proof or Netflix-proof. And with your phone in Georgia, pretty soon you're going to be able to bet in-game with your friends what they call the prop bets. Producers like Craig Silver, my friend from CBS, produced, believe it or not, a lot of SEC football games from a studio in New Jersey. So we've got to find new ways to engage with the younger audience. Data analytics is a massive career. What do I mean by that? They need to know, first of all, it's the stats that power your knowledge of betting and fantasy. And then the second thing is we need to know, and they need to know everything about your consumption habits to try to drive your eyeballs to watch it or bet or play fantasy or get your fanny in that seat. ESPN just doubled down on the SEC. They were already paying them $4 billion a year, another $3.5 billion for the exclusive rights beginning in 2024. And new ways to acquire content. Obviously, if you chart the success of Barstool, it is a case study for you to study how Portnoy started, you know, reviewing pizzas, then moved into edgy content, then drew around sports, then drew in a younger consumer, and then rode the wagering wave where Penn National Gaming, for a third of his business, paid him $163 million. So the future is bright. It's just being redefined in our space. So new growth, new opportunities, where are they? We had a great interview on our podcast with Alan Green, new wave CEO of the Auburn Athletic Department. These aren't athletic directors, guys. These are chief executive officers of $150 million organizations. People don't realize that. So now we've got careers in venue and facility management, safety, security. You've got giant performance, physical health, nutrition, hydration, performance. Mental health emerged as a big one. Content development, obviously. The whole world is driven by content. The press, the sponsorships, the data analytics, how these athletes train, and their safety. So tons of new opportunities. Concessions, how's that experience going to be delivered? Helping educate these kids. Data analytics and tickets are really, really, really big. So my traditional background of learning to be a sports writer and working in sports information was relevant to me building my business. But now you can have majors and undergrad and graduate that have absolutely nothing to do with the quote-unquote sports or communication or PR and have giant careers in this space. And we haven't even gotten into the student athletes and name, image, and likeness. And Thursday, I'm launching a new agency that are going to allow companies to take advantage of these student athletes and their families and bring billions of dollars of new revenue into the pockets of college students and college athletes, because now you can get paid for a YouTube video. My son can get paid, but Trevor Lawrence, well, he can now, but prior to the CFP, he could not get paid, which is completely ludicrous in a multi-billion dollar industry. So one of the things that I did in the spirit of silver linings, I wrote down everything I wanted to do when this thing hit the fan. And everybody always thought that this would be over Memorial Day, flatten the curve, and we'll be back in the summer. Well, wrong on that. We're going into our 12th month. So I decided to write a book called Build Brand New, which talks about the importance of nurturing your own brand. Treat yourself as your own brand. It's going to be a slugfest out there in the market right now for your dream job. As we talked about uncovering these new industries, I want to show you some tricks of the trade in the resume and some tricks of the trade in the social and digital world. Your brand is your values and your reputation. And then the integration of all the tools, experience, the networking, the relationships, the portfolio, the resume, the LinkedIn. This is going to be a slog. It's going to be a process. It's going to be an audition. It is not an application process in the real world now. And gain experience. Yes, that's me on the right. hanging banners for ESPN when cable television was in 10 million in homes. But by the time I left Auburn, I had produced over 1,000 events, had been published 200 times, and maintained relationships from 40 years with the Feinbaums and the Vitals of the world. So where you are right now is the most valuable time and fertile ground to build this long-term career path and career vision. The great campus of Emory is the ultimate professional lab. And it really doesn't matter what you do. If you're a barista, I want you to think about this. You're on the front lines of consumer behavior, serving hundreds of guests per year. You're not a coffee server. If you're a class assistant, if you're a student assistant, you're a lab assistant, what you're showing me as an employee is effort and initiative. I'm looking for the intangibles because, look, I had a really bad grade point average except in journalism classes, but I had this massive portfolio that I knew I was going to put myself in the 5% of the job hunt when I was out in the market, and I did. And we talked about maintaining relationships. The first two letters of relationship are RE, and the first two letters of reciprocal are RE. They have to work both ways, guys. Get yourself some note cards. Track Vince Thompson down. Send me a note with your resume that says, hey, I really enjoyed that. I want to stay in touch with you. I love what you have going on. Here's my resume. Keep me in the consideration process. As I said, it's fishing. You got to make 500 casts to land 8 bites to land 2 fish. It's going to be a numbers game. But all these little small tricks of the trade, you're showing me what type of employee you're going to be. And this sounds pretty rudimentary, and you heard it a million times, but I call it the grandma test. If you don't want your grandma to see it, don't post it. The first thing I'm going to do is check your social media profile. And by the way, you can have political opinions or whatever it is, and I don't have to agree with you. And I want you to show your authenticity. But what we're looking for in your postings is your judgment or lack thereof, because that is what we're going to base our hiring decisions on. I call it an inverted pyramid to build your resume. One page, lead off with who you are and what you want to be. Show your initiative on college, whether it be experience, awards, or volunteer. I expect you to be highly educated. And by the way, here's the thing. A resume is like a blind date. You only have one chance to make a first impression. Or I call it the billboard test. It takes 3 to 10 seconds to pass a billboard on the interstate. That's as much time as you've got to get a busy person's attention like myself. And you will be shocked that I will get a generic website, info at Melt, career at Melt, to whom it may concern, here's my resume, I need to make how much money. You know, the last thing I do, I flush the dadgum thing because I'm very easy to find on the internet. And you're showing me the effort or lack thereof that that you'll be showing as an employee. It's only as important as you make it. And you're showing the intangibles, not the tangibles. LinkedIn, greatest professional tool on the planet, bar none. As I said, I'm launching a new agency for student athletes called Sunil. Student athlete NIL, name, image, and likeness. It's going to bring new corporations billions of dollars into sports. I am just like you. I have sent 500 inquiries out through LinkedIn, leveraging mutual connections is what I call the warm lead, the ego league, or the emotional connection, which is low-hanging fruit. Hey, I heard Vince Thompson on the Emory podcast. I know you're linked into him. I would like the opportunity to link in with you. Know your target. Know Vince Thompson. Show the intangible. Soften me up. Hey, Mr. Thompson, congrats on your success. Congrats with Coca-Cola. Congrats on your award, War Eagle. You're really just showing me, you're softening the target. You're showing me that you put the effort in to research and study who I am, which is making an intangible impression on me, so I might accept your LinkedIn and I might begin a dialogue. And by the way, in this virtual process, and these rules apply whether you're in the office or on virtual, but you got to bring the heat. Turn the damn phone off. Don't have dogs barking. Be in a professionally back room. Dress professionally. Make this eye contact. Know your subject matter. Invert the process. Interview the interviewer. It's the intangible things. It's a process. It's an audition. It's a blind date. It's not an application. And it's going to be 50 to 500 times harder now to make those impressions. But every executive is sitting in their home in a virtual environment. So you actually have more opportunities than trying to get somebody on the phone in a meeting 12 hours a day at the Coke building or whatever. So you actually have more and better opportunities to do this now. And by the way, people say, Vince, what business are you in? I go, I'm in the rejection business. I get told no 99 out of 100 times, but I am absolutely relentless. Remember these two words. The letters N-O do not spell no. They spell the two words of not yet. And I'm doing the same thing that you're doing, just at a different level. But I am absolutely relentless in my pursuit of new business and building businesses. What's on the horizon? Legal wagering is a monster. Esports is a monster. Even EA football is back. The video games, which are tied in, Twitch is a monster. As we talked about, NIL is a monster. Where are these new revenues going to come? Fantasy sports is a monster as well. So, again, this is the glory days of opportunity in the sports and entertainment and culinary industries. Rules to live by? Just outwork people. Accept anything. I see a malady in the younger generation before COVID is that you thought you'd be CEO after 3 months. Don't happen, guys. You know, I'd hire somebody and pay them, you know, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year. And in 3 months, they wanted to be the CEO. And then they were pissed they weren't. And they left. And then I got to reinvest in time, money, energy, effort, replacement, retention. Take time to do an old-timey thank you. You'd be shocked how far that goes. Think about building your own personal brand. What do you stand for? Who do you admire? Is it Tim Cook at Apple, LeBron James? You know, what companies, what people? Try to tailor your own brand. Show that initiative. Again, work the Hades out of LinkedIn. You know how to do the resume now. You know what to do on social media. You know to bring the heat. You see my passion. You may or may not even like what I have to say, but you see my passion and energy in this. Be prepared. And whatever your passion is, right now is the time to do it, and leverage that emotional low-hanging fruit when you're reaching out to a lot of crazy busy executives. So that's it, guys. I hope I've helped, and I am here to answer as many questions as you might have.
Before we switch over, we'll give Doug a chance to construct a logical order to the questions from the audience, and also an opportunity for the audience to put anything else they want out there in the Q&A. Vince, I want to thank you. That was phenomenal. As I'm listening to you, I love the way you started. Some of what you mentioned really kind of touched me and sort of put off, you know, sort of alarm bells going on. Like the way you integrated from, you know, your journey getting to Auburn. And the first thing that really kind of I noticed and made a note of mentally was the fact that you had Bo Jackson and Charles Barkley on campus at that moment. And, you know, it's hard for me to not ask the question of, you know, how does that fundamentally change your experience at Auburn University when you've got guys like that that are, you know, creating legends while you're in, you know, on that campus?
And I'll tell you this too. We had Rowdy Gaines, who won about 500 gold medals in swimming. We had Harvey Glantz, the fastest man in the world. We had Bill Clasmeyer, the strongest man in the world. I immediately recognized a couple of things because the arrival of Bo and Charles to Auburn. Auburn at that time was at a very low point. And I saw the power of sports and performance that could restore a massive brand and a massive organization like Auburn University, because it was an emotionally galvanizing time. And I said to myself, I'll have a job the rest of my life because sports has that impact. And it really has it now because of, you know, in a period of COVID and civil unrest and political turmoil and all that, we still can come together and watch a game with our buddies and have debates as Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes, the GOAT and the prince of all time. So I think the emotional impact that I saw some of the greatest in the world have, even when they were 18, 19, 20 years old, really made a massive impact on me.
Yeah, and look, as a professor, I love what you're saying, because this idea that sports creates arousal, gets people excited, that fundamentally changes how receptive they are to, you know, the other brands that are involved.
Right.
Okay, so Doug, what is the audience asking?
Yeah, I'm going to go through these, as many of these as we can. I'm sure we may have more questions pop up than we're able to hit, but we'll do the best we can. First one is from Tom. He says, how was engagement tracked and recorded for FY 2020, assuming that's fiscal year 2020? What started as a normal year turned to an unprecedented cancellation of all professional sports, but opponents' return was greeted with even more excited fans and populations using their TVs and streaming services more than ever before. So again, the question is, how was engagement tracked and recorded during that time?
Well, a lot of us turned to a lot of traditional and non-traditional now digital and social analytics tools. So we would track the conversation and participation flow. If we knew fans were saying watching for instance, the Falcons versus the Eagles. Mm-hmm. We tracked a lot of participation within FanDuel and DraftKings, because you started seeing a lot of betting and wagering activity and fantasy activity as well. And we saw some pretty serious upticks in that, because people were gathered in their homes, communicating on their second screen and third screen devices with their friends who may not be gathered with them. So they had, basically a virtual social and emotional gathering. So it was in a social and digital environment. It was in, you know, four or five of the traditional social media platforms. Then it was in the fantasy platforms and the wagering platforms and, you know, FanDuel and DraftKings and BetMGM and some of those kind of things. And I could argue that it probably brought more casual fans into those franchises a heck of a lot earlier in their fan journey than they would have, because you didn't have anything else to do. So, like, you know, I wanted to bond with my 20-year-old son who was over at Georgia in the Sigma Nu, Sigma Nu house. We would pick three or four games to wager on during the weekend, and that gave us a conversational and watching platform, even though we couldn't come together and he was in Athens and I was in Atlanta. We'd bet on a couple games on Saturday, bet on a couple games on Sunday, and then settle up during the weekend. And then during the games, we were, you know, going up and down emotionally as it was happening. So but he and I probably never would have done that in a pre-COVID environment. I would have been over there, we'd have been at a game, or I would have been working an event. But so I think people saw it as a trial for a lot of emotional bonding.
Great. Well, thank you for answering that one. And next up, so we've talked about the University of Georgia. We've talked about Auburn University. Many of our listeners or viewers are at Emory, where collegiate sports are not at the same level or the focus of national attention really ever. What do you suggest someone can do to stand out, to enter the world of sports management coming from Emory University?
Well, here's the thing. First of all, Emory is one of the most vaunted universities and brands in the world. So you've got that going for you. The second thing is, as I think I pointed out, find out where these new areas are. I mean, you've got one of the greatest, you know, this program, for instance, one of the greatest business schools in the world and tons of other amazing schools. But as I pointed out, there are so many, quote unquote, non-sports related sports jobs emerging now. And if you go back and listen to some of the podcasts from actually some of the pro teams that I've interviewed with, they don't even want, like, I had the chief information officer of the NFL on last week, Michelle McKenna. she's not hiring anybody that has a sports background. Engineering, coding, I mean, analytics, accounting, stats. I mean, it's insane. So there are so many degrees available on Emory right now, particularly with your brand, that are so relevant to the entire sports and pro sports and collegiate sports world right now that have nothing to do with sports. I think you're actually in a better place.
All right. Well, let's see. Next up, we got Carrie Brown asking, in the same way as entertainment has had to reinvent live experiences, what can corporations learn to reinvent their events or conferences?
Oh, that's a great question. We are, and by the way, there's nobody's found the answer right now. I mean, maybe Pepsi with the you know, sponsorship of the halftime show this weekend with the weekend, but they still didn't really have a full line integration on it. Probably the best one that's done it is Amazon Web Services, because they're showing a relevance to the data and the cloud and the data management and the info that goes into AWS. Microsoft, when you're seeing them look at those tablets on the sidelines and those types of things. So most consumer packaged companies' goods right now are challenging themselves, challenging the traditional sponsorship model. How do we integrate with the fans? So I'll give you an example. One thing that we tested with Coca-Cola. So if you were in your home with your buddy and you wanted to watch the Falcons, but you didn't want to go down there, you could go on the Falcons site and say, well, I want a Holman and Fitch hamburger with an ice cold Coca-Cola delivered to my condo with some fun Falcon swag popped in there so I could watch the game as if I were in the stadium, enjoying that stadium food with an ice cold Coca-Cola. And then Coca-Cola, with their sponsorships, puts a fun cup in there, surprise and delight, coupons to drive you to, you know, use Uber Eats or DoorDash or Grubhub again or Postmates or something like that. So really having to rethink everything. And the, one of the hardest things, most corporate marketers are in the prevention, sales prevention business, risk-averse business, or playing not to lose. It's fun to see them all being pushed out of their comfort zones now, because I bring these ideas in to them for years, and they're like, no, we'll just pour Coke in a cup at the stadium and watch it with a hot dog or a Budweiser and a beer. And those days are over.
Yeah. Well, the days of college athletes not being able to benefit from their own name, image, and likeness seem to be over, moving in that direction. So with the advent of student athlete licensing rights, how do you think companies will approach collaborating with college athletes as opposed to professional athletes? Do you think the process will be the same, or are there different considerations at play?
No, I think it's massively going to be differently. Because I think the point and price of entry is going to be a lot lower. Okay. I think that name, image, and likeness is going to save Olympic sports and non-revenue sports and be a boost for female sports and Division II, III, and HBCU sports. Let me give you an example, relevant example I had yesterday. I was on the phone with a major CPG company, multi-billion dollar company, never spent a penny investing in college athletics. They make female products. And I said, I can deliver 200,000 female student athletes who are on television 4 hours a week, who have an average of 10,000 followers per, and their moms, and you want to launch a new product with this for a fraction of what it cost would have cost to have bought a Super Bowl ad to reach a 55-year-old white male. The lady said, where do I sign up? I've never had those types of conversations. So my goal is to put money in these, because you got to understand, when they say non-revenue, these girls on the Auburn women's equestrian team or Georgia team or Emory team, they're paying their own way through, and they practice as hard as the football or basketball team or whatever. And so if I can put money in their pockets, $5,000 or $10,000 is a major impact, and also help preserve these sports that are being cut out under the guise that we're going to use COVID because our athletic departments have been hit. All the while, Auburn just unveiled a $91 million facility and a $21 million buyout of Gus Malzahn to basically fail.
Right.
The whole damn thing is backwards and upside down. So I'm looking forward to disrupting the whole process, if you can't tell.
I can certainly tell. So along the lines of college sports, with recent events like UNC basketball game being canceled due to players partying and being unsafe about COVID, is it harder to work in sports marketing when you now have to rely on the team and the players in an entirely new way?
It's a lot harder. But because, let me just tell you, people can deal with bad certainty and good certainty. They can't deal with uncertainty. So like I said, corporate marketers are skittish by trade. So, you know, you got a lot of people that have billions of dollars in sponsorship dollars of people who have tapped the brakes during this process. And then sometimes they're afraid to advertise because they don't know how or what to say because they may alienate and offend half their audience. But again, I'm very bullish because in chaos, there's opportunity because the old ways and the old normal, those days are over.
Well, you spoke a lot about networking and staying connected to your network. I know you talked about some of the guys you knew even from your college days that you've managed to stay in touch with over the years. What ways have you stayed connected to your network remotely, given you can no longer see them in person, to nurture those relationships in this last year?
It's actually easier because like things like this, I mean, you know, we may have been able to work it out where I could come down to Emory or you know, spread it to as many people as possible. I mean, here's another business strategy I did with my podcast. I was using it as an excuse to reach out to a CEO, and I knew that he couldn't tell me no to help thousands of kids, but it was also a way for me to stay in touch with him and pitch the new business ventures I was doing in the pre-record before the podcast. So you got to be creative in how you think now. But to me, I mean, it's a hell of a lot easier because you know everybody's sitting in front of their computers 12 hours a day. And you'd be shocked at the responses I get through, you know, through LinkedIn. And people are like, wow, that's a great idea. I'll stay in touch with you. Okay, what's your email? Okay, send me an email. Okay, will you be on my podcast? Oh, by the way, I'm starting this business for student athletes, and you know you can use 100,000 of them to get a new a product offering out or new car. And I would have never ever had this traction in the old world.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Well, one thing I saw last week during the Super Bowl that we probably wouldn't have seen in the old world was Nickelodeon interacting with the NFL through some kind of VR lens. Do you think the NFL's deal with Nickelodeon will lead to other major sports leagues airing their games on kids' channels to appeal to those younger?
Because the biggest dilemma is continuing to bring your generation of consumer into these franchises.
Right.
The average age of the viewer of March Madness is a 55-year-old white guy.
Yeah, that's my.
And that is not a coveted consumer target. You are the coveted consumer target because they're trying to bring you into the franchise and build brand love for life and make you a 50-year consumer through your multiple life stages and life cycles.
Gotcha. Well, one question we got here is in regards to your podcast and how you've gained listenership. What was your podcast marketing strategy?
I'm going to be honest with you. It's a grind. I mean, you don't, unless you're like Lady Gaga or LeBron, you just don't wake up with some massive audience. The key is consistency and relevancy. So you couldn't just put something out there and expect somebody to glom onto it immediately. So, you know, Kyle and my team have developed a cadence where we have two per week. So you're conditioned to know one's coming out on Tuesday and one's coming out on Thursday. You're conditioned to know that our meltdown video comes out on Thursday, and you're conditioned to know our newsletter comes out on that Friday. So we had a constant cadence, consistency, showing passion, showing relevance, showing really, really good guests that would resonate with a young consumer or their parents saying, you know, hey, Vince, you need to listen because there's the president of ESPN on. And then we always encourage the kids to reach out to the president of ESPN on LinkedIn and say, hey, by the way, I just heard your podcast with Vince Thompson. Great job. Fascinated with your history. I'd love to establish a connection with you. So also it was a part of a virtual networking strategy on behalf of these kids, but also a way for excuse for me to communicate with the CEOs and CMOs And as I said, goodwill is good business to keep a positive, consistent face out there in an industry that had been devastated. So
right.
I had to stay relevant as well.
Yeah. Well, speaking of staying relevant, one of our listeners or audience members has said you managed to pivot a lot in your business or a lot of your business. What is still eluding you in a problem you're still trying to solve?
Managing an agency in a virtual environment is hard
because
we're creative and ideas and energy and we, you know, hallway and interaction and throwing basketballs off the wall and late night pizzas. It's hard in our world and it's hard in everybody's world as well, because there's still nothing that can replace being in rooms together and having energy and having eye contact and having a beer together or having a Coke together or bouncing ideas off. That spontaneity has sort of been stripped out. And so I think that's been one of the biggest challenges that is really actually trying to run a service-driven virtual agency. And then you don't know, it's hard to keep people motivated in a virtual world 8 hours a day. And then you don't know how everybody sort of handled being at home with their kids, their family, homeschooling, being solitary, or their parents sick. I mean, it's I've seen a lot of interesting behavior, good and bad, during this pandemic by running, you know, virtual businesses.
Mike, how are we doing on time?
We're good. How many questions you got?
I got two more.
Sounds good. Let's do
it. Great. Just want to make sure. Okay, so other than ways to attract more viewership and increase the lifetime value of customers, what are some applications of data analytics in the sports industry in terms of attracting more viewership and popularity, even outside of the United States?
Say that again.
Yeah, sorry. Let's see. I'm gonna skip that last part. So, what are some applications of data analytics in the sports industry in terms of attracting more viewership and popularity outside of the United States?
Well, I mean, I think, European soccer is massive in this country. So I think, I think the main thing is what value are you bringing to that consumer consuming that content, whether it's on a television or a computer or a wireless device. And I think what you've seen is you've seen ingenuity and quality of the production. Like I talked about those 8K cameras that were over Mahomes' shoulder, Brady's. The quality of it, putting you in the huddle or putting you in the pitch or putting you in the net, I think the quality of the production. And then are there ways as a sponsor that you could serve up, some added value to the equation? So like Rocket Mortgage had these chances to win $1 million and $250,000 and $10,000. Now, you know, the odds are very great that you won't win, but you're like, you know, hey, what the heck? I might win. But then Rocket is gathering your data. They know you've been there. They know you've engaged. They know you're maybe an interested consumer. And then they're going to continue to serve up core Rocket Mortgage offerings. But then they may say, hey, we see you're Kansas City Chiefs fans. If you enter this contest, you get to win a meet and greet with Patrick Mahomes in an autographed jersey. So it's the quality of the production and the quality of the engagement that is going to keep consumers coming back, and the quality of the competition. But you know, interesting in this environment, there's really no home field advantage anymore. Think about going to Seattle and the 12th man and all that, and all this piped in stadium music. And I went to the Auburn Georgia game. I went to the Alabama Georgia game. I went to Alabama Florida SEC game. And it's just bizarre to be there.
Yeah.
But it was all, and I think the NFL did a good job of the end game. I thought the college football did a good job. NBA is a lot harder to replicate, smaller arena, you know, the distance between, you know, all that. I think MLB did pretty good. But I think everybody had their druthers. They won't fans back in the stands.
Yeah, absolutely. People have been talking about Tom Brady going on the road in the NFC to win the Super Bowl. And you start to wonder if that would have happened in a traditional environment.
You know, there's no way it would have.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in the Superdome. You can't hear in there.
Yeah.
You're in Lambeau. I mean, it's intimidating.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to see how that factored into the wagering and the betting industry without the home field advantage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, last question. We're right at 2 p.m. here. What was the process of working with Coca-Cola while one of their major partners, FIFA, was embroiled in a corruption scandal? I remember this person is saying they remember Coke came out and criticized FIFA, but it'd be interesting to hear what it was like to be working on Coke's behalf at that
point. Well, the thing about any of the brands is that, because don't forget this, and I tell this to people all the time, forget the TV rights fees and all this kind of stuff. Sports doesn't exist without the sponsor dollars, because at the end of the day, they're the ones buying the Super Bowl ads that fund the rights fees to secure the rights to televise. So they possess a very loud voice in there. Secondly, they want to always protect the integrity of their shareholder, particularly their public, and the integrity of their consumer. So they're always going to side with those two constituencies over the property, and it's really a no lose, fail safe strategy, and it is their fiduciary duty as well. So and I think now there's so much sunlight and transparency and so many of these things that was not there. And I just had lunch today with the head of PR for NBC Sports, and we were talking about the Tokyo games, and then the next year you're going to have these games in Beijing and China and all that. And I mean, just crazy debates that you may not have had even 10 years ago without, the social media and the empowerment of the fans to have a say so.
Great. Well, Mike, I'll let you wrap it up here. Vince, appreciate your time answering these questions.
Hey, Vince, this is one of these moments in the online world where we kind of lack this ability to give you this warm round of applause, but definitely it's there in spirit. I think throughout the day you've really emphasized, your willingness and even eagerness to reach out and connect with the students and the other Emory alumni and the general public watching it. So, absolutely. I think, is it safe to say you encourage these guys to all reach out to you on LinkedIn?
Hit me up. It's my favorite thing because, I said, I've been very blessed. I had guardian angels, but I've also had to crash through 9 million doors. So if I can help open one door for somebody that leads to a job or a career opportunity or whatever, then it was a good day for me. And okay, so I like to be a servant leader in this capacity.
So absolutely, folks, encourage you guys all to reach out to Vince. Thank you a ton for the content. For everyone else, continue to stay engaged with us. Like I said, we got Jay Busby in about a month, Ann and Sid Mashburn 2 weeks after that. It's going to be, Vince, awesome start to the webinar series. And then the other thing is, how do we actually end these? It's like, go in peace.
Hello!